down in the morning lass, just kicking down the cobblestones, looking for fun and feeling groovy.
Oh, good morning, Reading. This is Dr. Trudy Pratt, and you're listening to Positively Healthy here on KCNR 1460. Why is it that before my show, they play the disclaimer about the views? Eric?
My dear, we play that in front of every show now. It's something that it just...
Something new.
Well, it's something new, and it kind of keeps the legal beagles happy, and it kind of keeps, you know, everything on an even keel that eventually as this radio station grows and becomes... I mean, it's just been skyrocketing. Somebody's going to say something that somebody's not going to like, and somebody's going to get their feeling hurts because that's the way it works. So we just say, hey... These are the views and opinions of the hosts and guests of this show, and it does not necessarily represent that of the staff, management, advertising.
No.
It's one of those legal things. It doesn't mean we don't like you. We love you guys, and the only reason why we have you here is because we love all you guys. So,
oh, you're good. Oh, well, gosh. Well, you know, here we are, a perfect Saturday, and...
Yeah. And you look... You look tired.
Thank you.
You look worn out, and normally you're just peppy and you just kind of...
Well, you know, two nights ago, the house across the street was robbed,
Ooh. And
that just sort of keeps happening around our town. And, you know, lots of action in the neighborhood, and then I kept missing it because I was sleeping. And then last night, I decided that I would try to keep a mindful eye of the neighborhood. So, you know, I watched out here and there a little bit just to see what's going on, and it was basically 1950 in Reading last night. There was nothing going on.
So you were one-woman neighborhood watch from 1955 Reading.
It was so quiet. It was perfect. There was no... I don't think there was a bad guy or gal within miles of our neighborhood. So, you know. But I wasn't going to miss something if action happened.
Were you sitting there with your baseball bat in your hand, clutched in your palms, watching out the door?
No, I just kind of was doing that glance to the left, to the right. I had the porch light. You know, the light, as much light as I could put on, and then you just kind of scan everybody else's houses. Not that I can see that many from mine. But what was interesting is that I did go through the house that got robbed, and I wanted to look through and see. I mean, it got ransacked, you know.
Wow.
And they went in and they took the flat screen. I guess they had two flat screen TVs. You can tell where they were by the mounts on the wall where there's nothing mounted. And then, you know, you can see that they took a pillowcase and they took everything off of the nightstands and all those places in your house where you think you're hiding something. Mm-hmm. Like maybe they aren't going to think to look there. They looked there.
They went through my sister years and years ago. They busted into her house and they went through her underwear drawer.
Yeah.
And guess what they found?
I'm going to guess underwear.
Well, they found not only that, but they found some of her jewelry that she had stashed in her underwear drawer. So don't hide your stuff in your underwear drawer.
Why do we think that's a good spot? That's,
you know,
just ridiculous.
Guys, they're going to go through your underwear. Sorry.
That's just
the criminal mind.
So kind of to help people in more of a prevention, our show is about prevention and about health. And, you know, so I guess my little heads up for folks would be like all those little things you think are a good spot to hide something. They're not. Those aren't good spots. So find another
spot.
Put it
in the cat litter.
That's great. That's different. Well, the guest we have, our first guest in the studio today is Michael Chytowski. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Trudy.
We know you have East Earth Trade Winds, and you're one of our sponsors. And you're going to do kind of a regular visit to us, you know, once a month for about 10 minutes or so, and you're going to teach us something. So what do you have on the menu for us today?
Okay, today I want to talk about the idea of acupuncture and acupuncture meridians and energy. And everybody, I think, has heard about acupuncture and the meridians and energy, but they don't know how that came into being, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So acupuncture has a long history. It's actually first documented about 200 B.C., but I'm going to fast forward this story up to about the 1800s. In 1842, in particular, in Shanghai, it was after the first opium war, and the British settled in Shanghai, and it was a trading port for opium and silk and tea. And then later we had a French settlement, and Japanese came and other international people. And by the 1900s, Shanghai was a busy port, and there's also a financial center there. And about that time, a Frenchman named Georges Sully de Marin arrived in Shanghai to work at a bank, and he had actually learned Chinese language in France at a young age. Somehow he'd known somebody and was instructed in Chinese language. Well, anyways, he spent a long time in Shanghai, and well, in China in particular, but about 17 years, and actually became a diplomat at one point. But somewhere along that line, he became interested in acupuncture and actually learned acupuncture. And so after he returned to France, he started teaching acupuncture and practicing acupuncture. and eventually wrote some books on acupuncture, and he translated Chinese texts, which was great because it introduced acupuncture to other cultures, the European cultures. And it had been there actually a while, but he was probably the first one that actually translated texts. But one thing he did was to make a mistake, and he used the word meridian, which we all know in acupuncture, and the word energy to describe terms in Chinese that aren't actually those terms. And so that's what I wanted to talk about
today.
That's
great. Well, we're going to take a quick radio break and come back with more of this fascinating history of acupuncture and what meridians and energy really mean just after this. Listening to Positively Healthy here on KCNR 1460. This is Dr. Trudy Pratt. I've had a chiropractic and nutrition practice for 19 years in Reading. And I have in the studio my friend Michael Chatowski, who's an acupuncturist. And, you know, we're just learning from you right now, Michael, that there's been a mistranslation a little bit in acupuncture. And so,
yeah, it's very interesting to learn this. I mean, in acupuncture colleges today in the United States and Europe, they talk about meridians and energy, but it's really not the case. And the problem with using those terms is it's kept acupuncture kind of on the fringe of conventional medicine. And the idea is that if they've been translated a little more correctly, that maybe acupuncture would be more accepted or maybe already be incorporated in mainstream medicine.
So do you think part of the problem for people, like we know the treatment works, but then it's when an acupuncturist explains it that kind of is a little bit confusing for people when we're talking about opening up channels and moving energy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it is.
Because we can't touch it, right?
Yeah,
we like stuff we
exactly,
can touch.
Exactly, and that's why it's been kept on the fringe, is because you can't find meridians when you dissect somebody and you can't see the energy. So people, and some people think that it's more a metaphysical concept. I've had people that come in and say, well, do I have to believe in this? And I go, no, because you know, you can do it on a cat or a dog
right.
or a horse, and it's not like you can say... Okay,
they didn't buy in.
Yeah, you're going to get better, and, you know, the dog's not going to understand that, but they do get better. So the terms that he translated as energy, the Chinese word is qi, and spelled Q-I, and pronounced qi as in cheese. And the Chinese word is actually... there's like three definitions. One is like gas, one is breath, and one is air. And there's some other definitions, too. But one translation is more like vital air, and it's kind of... It's a difficult word to translate, okay? So he decided to use the word energy, and nobody really knows why, but it stuck, okay? Mm-hmm. And then the other word that he used was meridian, and the Chinese word is jing lo, which means blood vessel. And so the original concept in Chinese medicine was about the circulation of blood in the body, and they actually discovered and wrote about the circulation of blood 1,600 years before it was discovered in the West. So they were quite advanced. They knew that the arteries sent out the blood and their veins returned it. So they had those concepts in Chinese medicine. But when you start talking about meridians, you think about, like on a map, you see lines drawn, and that was the idea that has stuck. And so over time, his French books got translated into German or English or other languages, and they kept sticking with ideas of meridian and energy. And eventually what happened is that when the Chinese started translating into English or other languages, they looked to the West and said, well, how do they translate these words? Because they're kind of difficult to translate. And said, oh, they use the word energy. They use the word meridian. So it stuck. But apparently in Chinese schools or in China, they don't talk about it as energy, you know, and they don't talk about it as meridian. These are Chinese terms, qi and jing lo, blood vessels, and then like vital air. So it's been an interesting concept. So what this means in terms of acupuncture is that all of a sudden it's easier to explain how it works. So what happens when you insert a needle in the body is that the needle triggers the vascular system, the blood vessels, and the nerves, and it sends a signal to the brain, and then the Chinese kind of mapped out where there'd be a corresponding reaction. So, for example, let's say you put a needle in the elbow, and there would be sensory nerves pick up that signal, and you go, wow, there's something stuck in my elbow. But the Chinese realized that there was a corresponding reaction in that area, for example, like a histamine reaction, like when you get bit by a mosquito and you get a little red bump. So they would call that, the Chinese would call that a needle reaction, seeing a little redness around the needle, when actually it's like histamines in that area. But it's triggering chemical responses in the body. And then they also figured out that it would create a corresponding reaction somewhere else in the body, maybe in the stomach or the other elbow or the knees, and they mapped all this out in the body. So in that sense, we can explain how acupuncture works a lot easier. And it's probably maybe more complicated than I'm trying to explain it. But basically, when you put a needle in somewhere, let's say you have neck pain, we can put a needle in locally in the neck and try to increase the circulation of blood in that area so the body can repair itself. Or you can use what's called a distal point, a point, say, in the ankle or in the wrist, for that same area, too, based on the acupuncture ideas of the channel pathways.
Now, when you explain that, that seems pretty simplistic and beneficial, right?
Yeah, okay. And it makes sense all of a sudden,
yeah.
Too. It's more like the points, I like to describe them as switches. All of a sudden, it's like you've got a, let's say you have a lamp in your hallway or a light in your hallway, and you've got two switches, one at one end of the hall or one at the other, you know, for convenience, and you can flip either one, it'll turn on the light. So that's what we're doing, say, with neck pain or back pain. We're using different switches, so to speak, to either, like, turn off the pain, or maybe you've got, like, a dimmer light where you can adjust the volume from bright to dim.
Yeah,
I guess that's the word, yeah.
Now, for people who haven't heard you speak before, who maybe haven't caught you during other times you've been on the show, when we say insert a needle, I just want you to describe that it's this tiny little needle and it doesn't hurt and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, they're very
thin. Because they're acupuncture needles. They're unlike anything anyone's ever
seen.
Yeah,
it's not like getting an injection or going to the dentist and getting a shot or anything like that. Yeah, they're very small. The needles themselves would probably fit inside. Many of them would probably fit inside of the average hypodermic needle.
And then they're on a point that really you can't really feel it going.
Yeah, it's going straight.
Yeah,
yeah.
You don't feel acupuncture that much. Every now and then you might feel a twitch or a twing or a twang or something, but you don't.
Yeah, it's relatively painless.
Yeah, so I want to just make sure that we sort of kind of backtrack and gather listeners who are like, and put the needle in your neck. You know, that starts to sound like something that maybe we really don't mean. So okay, go ahead.
Yeah. So anyways, the needles are very small. They're very tiny and. The insertion is relatively painless. We're not injecting anything, so they're not hollow or cut off at an angle. They're very sharp. There's the surgical stainless steel needle. Disposable needles are used. Once the needle's inserted, people may not feel anything at all, or they may feel a sensation like dull, pressure, heavy, which is all normal. And usually I tell my patients if it stings or burns, tell me and I'll change the needle location. But the main thing, going back to this idea of the switches, is that it's turning things on or off, you know, in your body. There's nothing on the needles. There's no medicine on that, but it's simply like turning these switches on in the body so your body can heal itself.
These are access points. You're going to insert the needle, and the body sets up this whole reaction where it starts
exactly,
to heal itself.
Most of the points are located near nerve endings or blood vessels. We don't try to hit the nerves or the blood vessels, but they're near it there, and they trigger this response in the body. So it's a great advantage for people who are seeking pain relief, for example, instead of using more and more drugs to control their pain.
Oh, no kidding.
They have an alternative to have their body heal itself. So what the Chinese discovered was pretty fascinating, and it's a great use for everybody, for pain or headaches, all kinds of stomach problems. We can treat practically anything you'd see a regular doctor for.
Excellent. Well, we're going to take a break here. You're listening to Dr. Trudy Pratt. This is Positively Healthy, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Positively Healthy here on KCNR 1460. And our guest in the studio is Michael Jatowski of East Earth Trade Winds. Welcome back.
Glad to be back.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that does give people a really good kind of a visual on what the treatment of acupuncture is and more of terminology that we're used to hearing. Blood vessels open up, oxygen, you know, words that you know, we know we need oxygen, we need it, a lot of it, and we need it sort of equally distributed. We know we need the vessels to do the same thing. We can't have constriction or, you know, it needs to be, so to regulate that, all it seems, I don't know, is that, am I getting that right?
Yeah, you are. Yeah, exactly. The only thing I want to say once again is that in acupuncture schools today, and they continue to use the word energy and meridians, and so, you know, you'll talk to acupuncturists and they talk about energy and meridian. So, like I said, this is kind of gives a different understanding on those words or why it works.
We like those words too. Yeah.
Yeah. And I probably still use them from time to time too myself. But it's also, once again, easier to explain to people, like, this is how it works.
Right.
It takes the mystery out of it so much. It's not this vague energy that, you know, you can't measure or see or feel or whatever. But
exactly.
But all of a sudden you do get better. And the other thing about acupuncture, too, which is interesting, is that, like I said, it's not something you have to believe in, and it doesn't matter whether you believe in it or not. If we get the right acupuncture points, you're going to get better.
So how many sessions do people need?
Well, That depends, okay?
Yeah.
So it depends on the condition they have for how long, if they have a chronic problem or an acute problem, things like that.
Okay.
But typically we'll have people come in maybe two or three times a week for a couple of weeks. The main thing is to control the pain.
Start there, huh?
Yeah, and then stabilize it, and then we want to get onto a program where we kind of make sure it doesn't come back.
Good.
You know, or if they do have a flare-up, it's not a big deal where you're wiped out for 2 weeks or a month or something like that. We can get it under control pretty quickly.
Oh, excellent. Well, you know, I was at your office last week, and I got to see your new remodel. So it's really, it's beautiful, for starters.
Yeah.
And then it's real obvious you can see all three aspects of your world. You know, you have your herb store at the front, and then your acupuncture practice where it's obvious that you're going through a clinic. And then in the back, you have that big mail-order business where you're doing a lot of bulk herbs and you're shipping things out, so you have, you know,
yeah, there's a lot going on there.
It is.
So the front, the store, anybody can come in at any time. We're open Monday through Friday from 8 to 4:30, and most of the remedies, herbal remedies, are over-the-counter herbal remedies for things like allergies or insomnia, things like that, energy products. We have a good selection of tea, lots of things like that. And then if people want acupuncture, we have a great acupuncture clinic there. We've got several rooms and a nice waiting area, and so we take care of people. So.
And if people want to look online, I mean, a lot your catalog, you put out your catalog, it's very extensive, but it's also online, right?
It is, EastEarthTrade.com. And then our acupuncture clinic is online, too, on Facebook, and it's Reading Acupuncture Healthcare, and healthcare is two words. So people can look us up online and see our remodeler, find information. I post information about acupuncture, news articles and things like that that come up, and try to keep people informed about that kind of thing.
Oh, nice. All right. Well, thanks for coming on today.
I appreciate it.
Yeah. This is Dr. Trudy Pratt, and we'll be taking a radio break here, and we'll be right back.
Today.
Oh, welcome back. Well, you're listening to Positively Healthy here on KCNR 1460. And in the studio today, we have two chefs, and we have Roque Carbajal and Tiff Carbajal. Welcome, you two.
Thank you.
Hi. Well, you know, thanks for coming on. And part of having you join us a little bit, you know, Roque, you were on before representing Northern California Rehab Hospital, where you're the executive chef.
Right.
And you know, as we've gone through, what are we in, month 9, I guess, of having a radio show, a radio station even, and so part of what I'm trying to figure out is, what is it that the public needs? And so what is it in my practice that people need? What is it that we need to help people do? And what I've come up with is that we really need to help a certain amount. We're on kind of third generation where nobody learned how to cook anything. And so you guys have this fabulous expertise, and you have a way with food where you know how to cook, you know what to, you know what is hard, and you know what is easy. Like a lot of people, I think maybe in their, I'm going to say 50s, 60s, 70s, they have dishes, maybe they aren't chefs, but they cook some really difficult things, and that's their training, you know, that just, you know, maybe your mom did that. Maybe both of your moms have things that today would be considered no way for people. And so you know how to cook things that are very difficult, but you're also very good at breaking information down and realizing if you just do these three little things, you've got that, you know, and it's delicious and nutritious. And so when we talk about survival skills, one of the ways I hope that I had, you know, professionally, is that we try to help people, maybe when they graduate from high school, have 10 recipes that they know how to make. And so, you know, if when we look at what makes a well-rounded person, I would have to think that being able to cook for yourself a little bit is a big deal. And at this point, we have people who can't recognize vegetables. You know, we have, in my practice, I see people who aren't totally certain what broccoli is. But it's bigger than that. It's not just that they don't know how to cook. It's that they really are afraid of it. And so for folks listening that might be from different generations, that just sounds odd. But it doesn't matter. You know, we have to kind of, it's a societal problem. So if we're going to be healthy people, we need to know how to cook. But what you guys offer is you'll be able to help us with simple recipes, and everybody, even people who know how to cook, want a simple recipe. So you've got broad appeal. And then you're going to meet, you're going to come on once a month, kind of do a, today we'll do a longer segment because we need people to meet you guys and know who you are. And then you'll do a shorter segment of coming on to teach something that you think the folks out in radio land might like to learn. Okay, so tell me, let's kind of hear your backgrounds. Rocky, let's start with you. When did you start cooking?
Started cooking before I was born.
Oh, good.
both my dad's and my dad and my mom were both cooks. Well, my mom was a teacher. My dad worked in construction, but they both cooking forever. And
great.
Big family of cooks. And then after high school, I went to college and decided to take photojournalism, but it didn't work out. So I went to culinary school up in Portland. And when I was there, I was working at a place called Club Sport, and I met Tiff there. And she had just graduated from the same culinary school, the Cordon Bleu up there. And she was working like two jobs, and I was like, wow, who's this little powerhouse just tearing up the cutting board? And
tearing up the cutting board, I love that.
And I was like, well, you know, it just so happens, you know, she had a little time for me, so that was that.
Woohoo, I like that. What do you have to say about that, Tiff?
Glad we met. yeah, I started cooking when I was little. My mother is a great cook and taught me how to cook. Every Saturday morning I would bake something for the week, like cookies or brownies or a cheesecake, and my sisters and I would share it throughout the week. So I began like that, and then I decided I wanted to go to culinary school, and I love baking, so I kind of focused in on that area. And now we just barely opened up our own bakery.
Okay, what did you open up? Tell us about your current business.
Well, right now we're down Park Marina, but it's a small building, so it's all on the order basis. So just place an order a couple days before you want to come pick it up. But about a month or so, we'll be moving into a larger location where we'll have a retail front, and we'll have like a pastry case where you can come in every day. And
okay, so you're doing more the desserts, like, because you are Sweeties Barbecue and Catering? No, is that?
Bakery and Catering.
Bakery and Catering, okay.
Just changed it.
Okay, you changed it on the way in the door here. Okay,
did.
Right. Okay, so you'll do any type of private order dessert cake thing for anybody. You were saying something like schools can't actually have homemade, I don't know, like you can't take to your sixth grade class homemade cookies anymore. You have to go buy them at, like, Safeway or something.
That's what I've heard.
Okay.
That you have to buy them from a licensed bakery where, you know, a commercial kitchen.
So they can buy them from you, and they can
exactly.
taste homemade.
And it's all natural, and I make it from scratch.
Oh, wow.
So it's just like your grandma made it, but...
So all those long lists of freaky preservatives and weird chemicals, you don't have them.
No.
I love
They're
that.
Not allowed in my kitchen.
Good. Okay, so that's what people can... You know, that's your business. That's your section, and that's... And
yeah.
If they were to look online or in the phone book, do they look under Sweeties?
Yeah,
or?
Sweeties Bakery is
okay.
in the phone book.
Okay. That's easy.
Working on a website. Haven't
yeah.
got that done yet.
I know. Though, gosh, mine took me 5 years. I understand.
You can also Google Sweeties Barbecue, and that will pop up. That's
okay.
Old.
And then you're more the barbecue fanatic.
Right.
Okay.
We started the barbecue business about 2 years ago, and just this year we started doing competitions. We are with the Shasta Association of Grillers and Smokers.
Oh, right.
Which
on.
Is a barbecue
we,
club.
We have an association.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
That's good.
Just so started at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, oh. We did the Pros and Joes. We helped with the Sundial Music Festival. We'll be doing the Big Bike Weekend.
Great.
And so, you know, we're getting more and more into competitions, having people that are Pros and Joes out there grilling, learning. It's a great learning experience. Everyone who barbecues, it seems like, has something to give. And they're always willing to help out. So it's a really good giving community and a source of information.
Okay. Now, you also just did the, you catered, because you part of your thing is catering. Okay, you catered Turn Creek Organic Farms.
Oh, yes. They did a brunch, the Family Farm Day, and they had, like 35 different heirloom tomatoes, about 8 different types of grapes. We did a large amount of food that day. In fact, we had to start turning people away. It just got so big.
Yeah.
But
what a great problem to have.
What
huh?
Yeah, never had that problem.
Yeah.
But hopefully next year we do be a lot bigger, and
All the produce that we cooked that day was all from the farm, all local cheese and meat.
Oh, yeah, everything was local.
We used everything from the farm that day.
Cool.
Entire brunch.
And
that's a turn on.
The owners were like Italian and Filipino, so we did Italian food and Filipino food.
Oh.
So we have a range of foods that we can do. We don't. Everyone says, "Oh, what do you specialize in?" I'm like, "What do you want?"
Yeah.
So we don't just say we're a barbecue this or barbecue that. I mean, everyone seems to want chicken tri-tip. They love chicken tri-tip, but
tri-tip is a Redding or maybe the California thing.
Yeah,
huh?
California. Once you go past California into like Texas, they'll slap you with a brisket.
Yeah. That's great. I love brisket, too.
Yeah, brisket's good.
That'll work. Well, hey, we're going to take a break here. You're listening to Positively Healthy. Don't go away. We've got recipes that are coming. Okay, bye.
Just
welcome back. You're listening to Positively Healthy here on KCNR 1460. And in the studio today, we have Roque Carbajal and Tiff Carbajal. Welcome back, you two.
Hello, hello.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about kind of your food philosophy. Where are you coming from here as far as...
Well, we try to keep it simple as possible.
I like that.
And we try to keep it local, keep it fresh, keep the money in the community because the community is supporting us.
Yeah.
And we really believe in the small farms. Depending on them, as opposed to getting tomatoes from out of season in, you know, Chile or Mexico or wherever.
Yeah.
And we just like to break it down for people to... It doesn't cost a lot of money to eat healthy. It doesn't cost a lot of money. You don't have to go to the store. You don't have to get a bottle of dressing. You can make it yourself. You can make your own salsa. You can do these things. They are time consuming, but in the overall, you're saving money. You're saving yourself a trip to the store. You appreciate what you do. So you have a sense of self accomplishment. I did this. This is mine.
Oh, that would feel good, huh? Yeah. We got to kind of help people
the
get
warm
that
fuzzies.
Feel good. Yeah, warm fuzzies warm are fuzzies. Important. Speaking of warm fuzzies, you know, forever I've made like a olive oil, balsamic vinegar, a couple of other little things in there, and it's really, for ages I've kind of, you know, it's definitely a feel good. I could make a certain dressing, and then a couple of weeks ago I learned to make French dressing, and you know, it was like the biggest deal ever for me. So, you know, the gal who taught me how to make that's going to come on here in a little while and teach everybody else. I mean, if you can get just a couple of dressings under your belt, you know, my one little dressing lasted, I was happy for like 10 years and I didn't even know that I needed to branch out until I tried hers, you know. So it's like we just take these little steps. Mine are probably smaller than most people's, but hey, whatever works for you. I mean, it has me eating really healthy vegetables and great salad and making dressing at home, and I can do it fast, and usually people compliment it, which is also nice and makes them want to eat their vegetables, you know. So what recipes did you bring for us today, y'all?
Well, today we brought some stuff from home that we like to do, and with ingredients that we grow in our garden.
Oh,
and,
wow.
We don't have a huge garden. We use a lot of half wine barrels. Our space is very, very limited. But we have about 16 wine barrels, and we can grow more produce than we can eat. I should say Tiff can grow. I made it, but Tiff has been the farmer and taking care of it.
So what do you grow in your 16 wine barrels, Tiff?
Tomatoes, peppers, eggplant. We have a lemon tree, herbs, parsley, thyme, basil. I have some beets this year. I planted some spring mix, but it turned into Swiss chard. Because it was supposed to be baby chard, but now I just grew into this huge plant of Swiss chard.
Just relabel it.
Oh, yeah, carrots. You know, simple stuff.
Oh, that's great. Okay, and so you have, what, a stir-fry then?
Yeah, I call it the fall stir-fry.
And what is a stir-fry, just for people who don't know what that means?
Stir-fry is basically you get your vegetables and you get some kind of flat top or skillet, and you put a little bit of oil and you put the vegetables on it, and you just stir-fry it together with a couple of offset spatulas or tongs or spoons. Or
so basically... throw everything in the pan, at the same time a little bit? Or
well,
not?
You want to offset the different vegetables because they have different cooking
times. They cook
times.
Okay, so you're slowly going to throw a bunch of vegetables in a pan and mix it. Is that okay? The stirring, frying kind of a thing.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And then with that, you're going to serve. That's going to make something a little bit like you would maybe have in a Chinese restaurant, or
something similar. You can add all types of different flavorings. The one we have today was something that we really like to do. We had some sambal, some sesame seed, so it does make it more Asian style.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We really like to put that. We incorporate a lot of different, like Mexican from my side, French from Tiff's side. And then we just love food in general, so Asians like are one of our favorites. So
we use
that quite a bit to change it up a little bit. But it can be served with anything. You have some chicken you picked up over at the market that's already cooked off, or you cooked it at home, or you know that would keep it really simple and easy, or you know keep it some tofu, add some tofu in there, and just serve it some brown rice or some rice noodles or.
Okay, so this is something that would be served over rice.
Yes.
Okay, well, let's go through this recipe then.
All right, it seems like there's a lot of ingredients, but it doesn't make a whole lot. It's just for a serving of six.
That's okay, because you know what? You're also going to give them your email address, and if they get lost along the way, they can email you.
Oh, yes, please.
Yeah, so
please.
Don't feel, listeners, if you're kind of like, oh, you know, if you get caught halfway through.
We love questions. We love to help people help themselves.
Cool.
So... starting off, we got again eggplant. You want it quartered slices. Again, onion, two medium onions, julienned, and that's basically in a quarter inch slice. That is on where I had a culinary teacher say where God put the lines to slice the onion.
Oh, that's good.
You slice it on the lines. And you get some squash. It could be zucchini or yellow crookneck, tatuma, whatever you like. Cut them in long ways and then also into quarter inch slices. About 4 or 5 cloves of garlic minced up. A couple carrots. Cut them long ways and quarter sliced. Peppers, your choice. We grow some different peppers. We like a little hot, so we'll throw some jalapenos in there, some serranos, some Thai dragons. Or we'll just do some bell peppers, different colors, Anaheims, just whatever's got around.
Okay, so what I have then on my cutting board, I'm cutting up all these vegetables. I'm cutting up the eggplant. I'm cutting up the peppers. I'm cutting up carrots. I'm cutting up garlic. And I'm just kind of not, I'm just chopping what? Like you're saying what? That kind of, like an inch and a half?
You're looking like if you were to cut it in slices, it's only going to be a quarter of an inch.
Okay.
And then they're going to be, depending on what the vegetables will be.
You want it mostly like a 1-inch cube kind of size.
Think 1-inch cube for all
this 1-inch cube for the squash and the eggplant. The garlic and the onions you want a little bit smaller. Well, the onions will be like strips.
Okay. Okay, that's
all. But keep everything separate on your cutting board, too.
Okay.
Put it on plates or in bowls or something to keep it all separate.
Okay.
Yeah, we use like a nice baking pan. Keeps things nice and organized, and just you know, and if your pan's too full, you can do it in smaller batches. So
okay,
keeps it simple.
Yeah.
Or if you don't want to cook it right there, you can just cook in a small batch today, small batch tomorrow.
Oh, I like that too.
So
that makes sense.
It all cut up already.
Yeah,
it's your mise en place.
Yeah. Okay, so go ahead.
Some basil, Thai, or sweet. You get a bunch, and you want to chiffonade that, and that's where you roll.
All right, time out. I heard that word, chiffonade. What the heck does that mean?
You get your leaves, you roll it up, and you slice them real thin.
Oh.
That's it.
That's cool.
Yeah.
We could do that.
We like to add some fancy words there.
Oh, I'm so impressed.
Just like if we knew what we're doing.
It's working.
Get a cabbage. You can do, you know, different types of cabbages. We chose green because it's pretty easily found around here. Just quarter it, and you want to just slice that up too. Some ginger minced, about a tablespoon. Olive oil, about 3 tablespoons. Sesame seed oil, about 2 tablespoons. Some sambal, olik, which is a garlic chili paste. This is optional. We are big spice
fanatics. You guys like it hot.
We like it hot.
Yeah.
So we put about 2 teaspoons in there, but that's kind of your taste. Yeah.
Okay.
He puts 2 teaspoons per on his plate.
Oh, gosh. That's great.
And liquid aminos or light soy. I've gotten to this liquid aminos kick where it's just, it's so just pure tasting. It doesn't have any metallic taste to it, like some soy sauces do. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have the wheat in it. It's just, it's really great. So I highly recommend that for a lot of people. But if you can't find that, light soy is good. You don't have all that salt, and you have more of a soy flavor.
Okay.
So gather up your cast iron pan or stainless steel skillet, something really large to hold all these veggies. And you just want to heat it up, add some the oils. Then you're going to saute your onions, your carrots, and peppers.
Okay, so here I am with my big pan. Okay, and how much of what oil am I putting in? You said some sesame. And
two tablespoons of olive oil.
Olive oil.
And 2 teaspoons, or I'm sorry, 3 tablespoons of olive oil and 2 teaspoons of sesame.
Okay, so I have it on what, medium?
You want like medium high.
Medium high.
This is like a fast cook.
Okay.
So you want that nice heat.
Now,
to
do
it.
I wait for the oil to do something special, or
you
do
want,
I just
right,
pop
you
the food
heat
in?
Heat
or?
Up your pan, add your oil, and when it starts to just barely smoke,
uh-huh,
is right when you want to put your...
Okay, so when I put them in, I should hear a little something?
You're going to hear...
Okay.
Where people are like, oh, no, it's going to catch fire.
That's when we all get scared.
That's
you
when
know,
scared.
We're like, oh!
Don't be scared.
Okay.
Buy one of those... Oh, this helps out a lot. Buy one of those screens that has a handle,
oh,
and put that on top, and that will save your stove,
okay,
from getting
grease spots all over.
Okay, or just wipe them up when you're done,
yeah,
right? Okay. So it's in there. What did we put in first?
We got the... onions, carrots, and peppers.
Onions, carrots, and peppers.
Yep.
They're in there. They're sizzling.
They're cooking.
Okay.
So
what are we waiting for? What do they need to look like before we add the next stuff?
When you get your onions to where they start being translucent, start to, you know, change color a little bit, you add your squash, your eggplant, your garlic, cabbage, ginger, your chili paste if you want it at that point. And then you let that cook for 3 to 4 minutes or until the squash is tender but not mushy.
Okay.
So... It's this is, you know, all this takes about 10 minutes to cook.
I can see that.
Yeah.
It's a fast thing.
Fast cook. I mean, it's
so the slow part is the chopping, but you could do it ahead.
Yes.
Okay.
Once you have everything in the pan and it's frying up, and then you can put the lid on, a lid on your pan, and that'll kind of steam everything,
mm-hmm,
and cook it a little faster, and then that way you don't need more oil. You just kind of steam everything.
Okay.
And then all the flavors kind of meld together and turn into something delicious.
Ooh,
yeah, and then it holds in the moisture and it builds up a sauce for it, and then you can add your
sambal and soy.
Your liquid aminos for the
you're adding
sauce.
That at the end?
Yes.
Okay, so that's at the end, and then what's this hot stuff called again that you're...
The sambal, it's sambal olik, it's just a garlic chili paste.
So it's a paste, it almost looks like what, a toothpaste?
It's
kind of tube
comes
thing?
In a jar.
No? Oh, it comes in a jar.
A jar, it's just red, it looks like ground chilies. And that's it.
Oh.
You can put in chili oil, you can put in the chili paste, or, sriracha. A lot of people use that these days. That's a great way to add chili, too.
Okay. I don't know those things.
Sriracha.
That's why I'm here.
Yeah, sriracha is like
a
Vietnamese ketchup.
Oh.
Yeah.
Sounding good.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so now, are you through it? Are you done?
Pretty much, you just let that cook down for another few minutes, and basically you're waiting for the vegetables to be tender. And it's preference. This is where you come in and decide to say, hey, I like it a little more crunchy, or want a little more soft.
Or, gee, I don't like eggplant, I'm going to add all this other stuff. Or,
exactly.
I really don't like carrots, but I like everything else.
Exactly.
So you're kind of doing that ahead of time to decide.
But once it all cooks together, it kind of... It doesn't taste the same, but, I mean, it all kind of melds together.
Yeah.
So it's hard to pick out certain things like that.
Well, you know, you're listening to Positively Healthy, and we're doing some real basic cooking here. This is Dr. Trudy Pratt. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Dr. Trudy Pratt, and we're talking stir fry. So we have Rocky and Tiff Carbajal. Of Sweeties, we got rid of barbecue. Okay, bakery and catering, because catering includes barbecue, right? So we don't need to
exactly
say it now. Okay. All right, so we're talking stir fry, and we've just gone through this exquisite stir fry recipe that I actually think we can all do. And so now we got to the point where we really have it, the lid on the pan, and the vegetables are just softening up the rest of the way. Okay, but then during the break we were talking about when we're supposed to really add the meat. So do you want to come back, Tiff, and say when you...
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, meat is optional, of course. I would say if you're doing raw meat, like raw chicken or beef or pork, put it in the beginning with the onions, and that way it has time to cook. If you're doing a pre-cooked, like chicken, or, you know, that you cooked the night before or something like that, and it's already cooked and you just cube it up, Put that in the pan with the squash so it can just warm up with everything. If you want to do tofu, mm-hmm. put that in with the squash also, I'd say.
Okay.
Unless you want to saute it on the side in a different pan and then add it in with the squash.
Okay.
Depends on how toasty you want your tofu.
Yeah.
Or you can always bake some fish on the side, you know, bake some fish in the oven, and then you just add it on your plate.
That sounds doable.
Yeah.
Now, I'm looking at our time here. I think we really do have time to talk about rice, because rice is a funny thing, you know? I think we've all had some really last-minute burn-the-rice problems that are stuck in our brain somewhere. You know, you got the company ready, you've got everything, you know, perfect, and then you burn the rice, and it's like, oh.
Terrible.
Yeah. And so what helps people have maybe a little bit of foolproof or fail-proof rice? Or how do you guys make rice?
Usually I fry up the rice a little bit in a little bit of olive oil, about a tablespoon or so of olive oil
before it's even cooked,
when it's raw rice.
Oh.
You know, well, dried. Not.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just saute a little bit of olive oil. Sometimes I put some minced garlic in there. And then I add, when it's hot and it's been frying up for about maybe a minute, then I add in my water and it kind of will sizzle, and that reaction makes the rice not stick together. It'll make the rice really fluffy. And I use brown rice with the hull still on.
Okay.
The healthiest kind.
Yay.
And so, yeah, just put enough water in there. You want, for white rice, you want double the amount of water as you have rice. So like a cup of rice, you want 2 cups of water.
Okay.
Brown rice and wild rice both like a lot more water. They want like 2.5 times the water.
Okay.
So let's say you have a cup of brown rice, you want to put like 3 cups of water in.
Okay.
And that's the way you'll get it to not burn. And then once you put your water in, turn it down to like a medium to low heat.
Okay.
And just let it simmer very slowly.
Okay, so run me through this again. So we're putting the rice, even if it's wild rice, we're going to put it in, kind of do this saute-y little thing where we're going to put it in the oil and let it kind of brown. Are we just browning it a little?
No, you're not going to brown it because it's it's raw, so it's like grains. You just kind of want to heat it up in the oil.
Okay, you're heating it up.
Just about a minute or so, frying it up in the oil.
And you're putting what your garlic in there, which is...
I like to saute the garlic. So what I know when the rice is done is when the garlic's turning brown a little bit.
Oh, perfect.
And that's when I added my water.
Then you add your water. Okay.
And when you're sauteing it, you're going to have it like medium to high heat. And then as soon as you add in your water, it's going to kind of warm up a little bit, and you're going to turn down your water, or your heat, I'm sorry. Turn down your heat to like a medium low.
So we're not bringing anything to a boil and then turning
it down.
No,
you just want it to simmer.
You just want it to
simmer. Nice and
slow. Okay.
And that way you won't burn your rice, because usually I burn it when I walk away and I leave it on high heat.
Oh, yeah. I'm famous for using high and then leaving. Yeah.
Exactly. So I found I put it down on medium to low heat.
Okay.
And it's just simmering along, and then I set my timer for about 40 minutes for brown rice. And then I check it.
Okay. Now, we're going to come back and talk to you more about this rice, but I want to give out your email address really fast for people who are thinking they're trying to get out of their car and go somewhere right now, but they're waiting for your email address.
SweetiesCatering@sbcglobal.net.
Okay, and we're going to say that a couple more. Oh, spell it out? Okay, go ahead.
So SweetiesCatering@sbcglobal.net.
SweetiesCatering.
Catering at sbcglobal.net.
Okay, that sounds good. Okay, so now we have this rice. We didn't have to boil it. I always thought you had to boil it. And then is the fit of the lid, does that mean anything?
Yeah, I put a lid on.
Okay, but does it have to be just, you know, perfect, or can it be the lid that dropped and it's got a little...
If the lid is open a little bit on the pot, if it's not a tight-fitting lid, if it's going to be cracked a little bit, you need to check your rice more often and maybe add water, because the water will evaporate through that crack.
Oh, okay.
So that's the only thing with the cracked, you know, when the lid is cracked open a little bit, you just want to check the water
question.
Situation.
Can you peek at your rice? Is that true?
Yes,
you
just
can
do
peek?
Not stir.
Just don't stir it.
You can look at it. Don't stir it.
Okay. Oh, okay. I always thought we couldn't even peek. Yeah.
Yeah. No, when you stir it, the gluten, it comes out of the rice. It's not really gluten. It's called something else. But I don't know.
But it gets
rice.
Gloppy?
It gets like gloppy and like kind of sticky. If you want sticky rice, stir it as much as you want. But if you want light, fluffy rice, do not stir.
Okay. Well, gosh, I want to thank both of you for being on the show today. And I know that the listeners are going to learn so much, and obviously so am I. So, you're listening to Positively Healthy. It's been another great Saturday. We'll see you next week on KCNR 1460.